Gene Harris on piano and Scott Hamilton on tenor sax. And the Gene Harris Scott Hamilton Quintet, which includes Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, and Harold Jones on drums. This is called Blues for Gene. It comes on the 1990 album At Last. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And guess what we're going to do today? Yep, we're going to talk about some court cases yesterday that yielded some stunning results. And you're going to tell us what you think, how you analyze the situation, and what do you think Donald Trump is likely to do, considering the outcome? President Trump didn't have a good day yesterday, as you know. And from the looks of things, he's in for many such days. Trump's former campaign chairman and trusted political operative, Paul Manafort, was convicted of 8 counts of bank and tax fraud. The jury was deadlocked on 10 other counts, and a mistrial was declared on those charges. In a separate development, Trump's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, pled guilty in a plea agreement to bank and tax fraud, paying hush money at Trump's direction to women with whom the then presidential candidate allegedly was romantically involved, and violating federal campaign finance laws. The Manafort and Cohen cases now threaten to draw Trump into the circle of criminal wrongdoing, and it is the closest he has come to facing the wrath of the courts and the prosecution. As you know, this all comes out of the ongoing probe into what happened with the election, and Manafort emerged as a key figure in the Trump campaign, and whether, of course, he knew of or orchestrated or in some way was involved along with Trump in playing ball with the Russians, in trying to affect the outcome of the election. Well, he got snagged. He got snagged big time. And the way they went at it, as I had remarked on the at the start of the trial, it is fascinating how they approached this trial or these trials. As a way of getting to Trump. They didn't go directly to Trump. They still have not gone directly to Trump, but they have gone to key figures, trusted aides around him, and have managed to put the squeeze on them in ways that had nothing to do with the question of collusion, or did they work together with Trump, or did Trump work together with them and Russians to affect the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. But in any event, this is as far as it has gotten. It's a significant development, and it throws Trump into a tizzy because it is the clearest indication yet that they're coming after him. And will he be ready? How is he going to react to the situation he now finds himself in? Because there is no doubt that he is in the crosshairs. As of yesterday, it became even more certain that he is in the crosshairs, and he may be looking not just at impeachment, which could be a result, the Democrats would rev up that call, But he's also looking at the possibility, depending on how deeply involved he was with both Manafort and with Cohen, he may be looking also at prosecution on criminal counts. We don't know, but it is a fascinating turn of events. We can talk to lawyers, and we will talk to lawyers and get their legal expertise, but I like the idea of us just talking. And, at gut level, what do you make of the results of yesterday's two legal proceedings? What do you think it does to a possible Trump indictment, impeachment, and or maybe it does nothing? How do you think Trump will respond? And where do you think this goes from here? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're just talking based on what we observe and our gut feeling. This is a gut feeling. There's no right or wrong. We are interested in your initial reaction. Of course, things would change. But right now, what are you thinking and feeling about what happened yesterday and what may develop out of it? And more importantly, where does it put you and me, if it puts us anywhere at all, with the outcome of yesterday's blockbuster twin convictions? And how do you treat the plea agreement? How do you regard the plea of Michael Cohen? He actually pleaded guilty. He wasn't convicted. He offered himself up and said, "Yes, I did these things, and I did these things at the direction of Donald Trump." Of course, that didn't apply to the tax matter, the evasion of taxes and bank fraud. But the key thing that we obtained from Mr. Cohen is that he actually pointed a finger. He pointed a finger at Trump and said, "I did this illegal thing." He never named him. He said he did this in behalf of a person running for office. We all know it's Trump. And that thing that he did constitutes or constituted campaign finance fraud. And that's a way of dragging Trump right into the circle of suspicion. On the Manafort side, we have a trusted chairman of his campaign, and this is now going to lead us in the direction of whether and how and if Trump colluded, worked closely with the Russians, as Manafort evidently did. Manafort was his representative, his chairman. Is it easy to prove now, easier to prove, that Manafort's very intimate relationship with the Russian order also means Trump's very intimate relationship with the Russian order? So, what are you thinking? Where does this go from here? And what do you see as the most significant developments as of yesterday pertaining to Trump and where things might be going from now on in the immediate future with regard to an investigation of the president whether it would result in hearings or a court case, we don't know. Mitchell from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Mitchell. Oh, well, we thought we had Mitchell on from New York on the air. Apparently, he's gone. 888-874-4888. This, in historical terms, is very significant. It is very jarring for a nation, any nation, when its head of state is under the gun, under the suspicion of doing wrong. And when people close to him in his inner circle are convicted by evidence, this is not hearsay, convicted by their own confession and own admission, and convicted by a mountain of evidence that they have been doing wrong. They were doing wrong all throughout the tenure of the head of state, and in behalf, in some cases, of the head of state. It unsettles a nation. And this is one of the things that I don't think Trump has ever understood or cared about. Since coming into office, and even before coming into office, he has been so reckless, and it has finally caught up with him. We have Mitchell back on. You're on the air, Mitchell.
Hi there. You're truly
Hello.
sorry about that. I may have had the mute button on. So sorry. But thanks for your good show. Yeah,
Thank you.
in commenting on this new dynamic arising yesterday, I would say that that old phrase, if you show me a person's friends, I'll be able to tell you a lot about the person's character. And if we look at Trump, going all the way back historically, we see that he, with his father, were hanging out with a rather unsavory crowd in the real estate business in Queens, going back to the earlier years, and all along with people like Roy Cohen and others, he has been associated with the mafia. Everybody knows it who lives in New York, who has any awareness of the news, not to mention further depth of understanding in the real estate business. And so here we go, all the way on up to the White House, and we see the same thing. So when these newscasters on mainstream media are kind of posturing about whether the president knew of that meeting, for instance, in Trump Tower, which was like a couple of floors down, or he didn't, I think they're just, pardon my French, playing with themselves, because everybody can intuit and reasonably infer that he knew everything about what was going on from day one, all along, virtually every last detail. They probably didn't even have the idea inside their campaign of plausible deniability. So when you add all of that up, I mean, you know where those fingers are pointing, and no one should be surprised at all. It's a surprise to
But you know,
me that
Mitchell,
people would
I would
make
have to
believe they're
challenge you
surprised.
here. I
Please.
understand your point, and that would work, in an informal sense. But it is not enough to use inference in a trial or in any legal matter. You have to have evidence. And I think you would agree, this is probably the first time that we have gotten an actual allegation from one person who is in a position to know and who has, under a plea agreement, and even that in a court of law could be challenged, a good defense lawyer would say, the guy is under duress. What do you want? He is saying things that would save him from further aggravation and grief. So, yes, he would implicate the president to save his own skin. But this is the first time that we have not one but two possibilities of corroborating the key facts that the prosecution wants to be able to face Trump with. Wouldn't you agree? Do you think that inference is enough?
I agree with you completely, Utrice, that what I'm saying is not for the court of law in the Justice Department, but in the court of the people, that we don't get mistaken about who's really guilty of what. I think that, you know, I'm just talking about among us, you know, among us girls, so to speak. You know,
I get it.
That we don't have any lack of clarity about who the man is, who he has always been, and the characters that he has surrounded himself with. So when we go into court, it's absolutely true all that you said. We need, but in fact, we know where we stand in advance. That's really the point I'm making.
Okay, what are you looking for in terms of reaction from Trump? What are you looking for in terms of his behavior or his conduct?
I'm expecting that he deny everything, that he does what all bullies do, especially when they're cornered. This one does it anyway, but when they get cornered, they become even more venomous and attack more people with even stronger language. And so that's what I'm, you know, I don't want to say looking forward to, I don't, but that's what I'm basically anticipating from him at this point. More denial and not backing off, and his lawyers doing everything they can to circle the wagon, but they're all going to end up, unfortunately, with a lot of pie in their face, especially Giuliani.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for getting us started today, and thank you for your contribution. Bruce from New York, how are you reacting to yesterday's development?
Well, Utrecht, you know, I am not too caught up in this again. I've seen what's happening, right? But my point of departure is that Trump is not an aberration, that Trump is like Clinton. As Americans, apple pie, you know, that he is culturally bound. I believe that the events of yesterday are not going to do anything to fundamentally change this political culture or this wider culture. We have had before a president, I'm talking about Lyndon Johnson, who was known to have had all types of assassins and that type of thing on his personal list, you know, to kill people, his enemies and that type of thing. So I am saying that Trump is, as Americans amplify, I don't believe that even if he were to be impeached, that it will change the fundamental racist character of this country, for instance, right? And even if they attempt to impeach him, or even if he loses an election, I do not believe that Trump would surrender. You know, I see a decadence coming. I see this thing getting from bad to worse. I think that Trump could only behave how Trump can behave, and Trump is not going to bow to any effort to censor him, to impeach him, or anything like that. And I think it's going to be a crisis. I think it's going to go from bad to worse.
Do you appreciate at all the significance of yesterday's two separate but linked trials?
Well, yes. In a basic and legalistic sense, yes, it has some meaning. But Trump, we know, is a racist, right? How does the removal of Trump going to change anything that's racist about the culture in which produce him? You know.
Let's start. Let's go right back to where we began on this. Insofar as you recognize yesterday as being significant, what do you think it is significant for?
Okay, it is significant in that one set of the elites are saying that this particular person who is heading another set of the elites, right, has to be brought into line. You know, there are two sets of elites that are fighting for power. And this is what I see this as about. For instance, Trump has all these billionaires on his cabinet who are quietly changing the structure of the country. And he is somehow to be seen as somebody who is so dangerous and out front. But all the fundamental things that are happening that the people in charge of this country like, they have no problems with that. So, yes, they may get rid of Trump, but, I mean, Pence may be even worse. And in any event, I see no fundamental change. You know, we may just be tinkering with a bad system or a system that is dying at best.
But stick with the legal question for a moment. I appreciate you, your forecasting, but let's stick with the legal question for the moment. What has emerged as of yesterday? Go ahead.
Yeah. What has emerged is that as a legal question, it's going to give impetus to another legal or political process, meaning that the Democrats are likely to do better in the midterms and that the House of Representatives may take a political action against Trump. But as law in itself, I mean, I don't see any fundamental changes beyond that.
Okay. Thanks so much. You always get at the root of things. And I thank you for today. What we want to get at, I want us to look at whatever it is you think about yesterday's events. Could you give us some kind of legal understanding from your point of view? But we're dealing with the legal elements here. A president is at the precipice, which is absolutely true. Until yesterday, Trump can gallivant around and make wild statements and cuss people out and do all of that stuff. As of yesterday, that ended. Because it is so clear that the prosecution has scored some very significant points against him, and he's up against a wall. Now, when was the last time that we had such a development where a president basically was handed over to the prosecution by virtue of the testimony and evidence offered by people who were very close to him? Now, they have all kinds of reasons for doing that to save their own skin, but it is a significant thing, don't you think? 888-874-4888. This is what I think we have to appreciate about yesterday. We don't have to like it or hate it one way or the other, but we appreciate it for what it was and what it is. That the president was a quarry. He was a target for quite some time. Look at the environment that he himself created with this deep criticism of people associated with the investigation of this probe of Russia meddling. Look at his conduct. Look at all the things that he did and where it ended up yesterday with two key people who were very, very close to him, extremely close to him, basically giving him up, basically turning on him and giving fodder to further possible legal troubles for Trump. This is a great, great development. And of course, I think I agree with Bruce. I agree also with Mitchell. You know, this is, Mitchell called it, this is the swamp. This is the swamp. But it is fascinating to observe the swamp, isn't it? it's fascinating to see how, you know, we elevate these people. We give them enormous respect and credit and adulation. And the last thing we are thinking is that they are ordinary crooks, extraordinary only in the degree to which they are able to profit from being crooked. But somehow, and I think both Mitchell and Bruce scored that point, somehow with Trump, it's not a surprise. These are the people in business that he's been surrounded with for a long time. And now it's elevated to a different level. Now the stakes are higher. It is very public now what is happening and what has happened. And now comes the issue of paying the price for being, you know, a side of the law. So it's interesting to watch how Trump will handle this, considering his, his psychological, the psychological profile he has presented to us as a man of great furor, of a hot-tempered person, a person who makes decisions that make no sense in the moment, a person who is reckless with very great disdain for the so-called established order. And yet, it is no question, there is no doubt that he is in the middle of the crosshairs, and we have to look and see what the next chapter brings. It's going to bring him into a circle of suspicion, and you have to see how he deals with it. What defenses could he possibly have for the charges that might be contemplated against him? All right. So it's a great, great moment in American legal history and in American history. I know we may think of it simply as a story, but it is actually a great historical moment. Especially for legal scholars, they will say, you know, this hasn't really happened before, where a president has been essentially surrendered by his own confidants to the authorities for charges, grievous charges, actually. These are very serious charges. A former CIA director, Brennan, even put it as close as treason. He has said, he has categorized President Trump's actions in terms of colluding, allegedly colluding with Russia in affecting the outcome of the election, and in other areas where he has, without public knowledge, really, he has had backdoor relationships with Russian intelligence, with Vladimir Putin and others. And Brennan insists that this was tantamount to treason. We haven't seen this in our time. So it is an extraordinary moment that we ought to pay attention to. But it's also important for us to get a sense for ourselves, which is what we're trying to do here today, what your initial reaction is, your innate reaction is, because that too is a valuable component of what it means to be a proactive citizen. 888-874-4888. I don't see anybody on the line just yet. This is unusual. Okay. So we will take this break and come back to your calls right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about the spectacular legal developments yesterday, where we had the president's former campaign chairman and his former personal lawyer, both essentially indicating a willingness to cooperate with prosecutors against President Trump. Lincoln from Mount Vernon.
Hi, good day.
How did yesterday's events affect you?
The crocodiles and the rhinoceros fighting amongst themselves. The crocodiles turning on the crocodiles and the rhinoceros turning on the rhinoceros and the crocodiles turning against the rhinoceros. That's what is occurring. It is war. And the Cohen and the other fellow, they're just trying
it's
to
Manafort.
Protect themselves.
All Manafort.
Yeah, and Manafort. They're just trying to protect themselves. They're all in their, it's like, they're like those people in the mafia who, they were once hitmen for the mafia, but now that they're scared of jail time, they now start ratting, you know, and they will even tell lies. And what is sad about it is that we, the people, are allowing them to take us down this slippery road because it has nothing to do with truth. On both sides, they're all disingenuous. And because we know, as shown by the WikiLeaks cables, there was no such thing as a Russian collusion. And also, too, they're avoiding the revelations of these cables. Why aren't they dealing with what was shown about the Clintons in the revelations? And we, the people, allow them to distract us from what the cables are saying. And instead, we're saying, okay, because we hate Trump, let's castrate this fellow. Yes, Trump is a horrible fellow, but we, the people, have become silly. And I see nothing but children fighting amongst themselves. You know, evil children fighting amongst themselves. And to me,
yeah, but these are not ordinary children. These are the president of a country, one of the most powerful countries in the world, the leader of, they like to say, the leader of the free world. This involves high-level individuals who were given positions of authority and trust within his administration. And we see that an investigation that was launched was viciously attacked by the president. He demanded that it come to an end. He demanded the resignation of people who are involved in the investigation. He was extremely against this investigation. But we don't even know at this point what exactly has been found out. We know that initially, even the U.S. intelligence community had said there was no interference by Russians electronically in influencing the election. And you raise a question of Hillary. She's not in the picture just yet. So tell me about Trump. What was significant about yesterday?
I think we will see Trump. He is a fighter, and I'm not saying this in defense of him or in admiration. I'm just saying it in observation of him. And he's one of those. I once read something about him where he told even his children, he said, hey, never apologize. You know, don't trust anyone. Don't trust me. And I think he will continue to fend for himself, just like we see, you know, his response to Omarosa, his response to even, and his, you know, they're all users. All of them are users. Even the ones, and I think we make a big mistake. We keep saying high office. Bill Clinton getting oral sex in the White House should tell you that we're not talking about no high office. And I think we keep calling these people noble people. These are gangsters. These are thieves. And I don't care how many law degrees you have or how whether you came out of Harvard or Yale, that does not make you a person of high moral standing. These are just gangsters, hiding behind their so-called degrees and hiding behind the dupeness of the people. We think that because somebody has some kind of degree or you're famous or whatever, that makes you special or noble. These are not noble people. None of them are. They're no different. They're just rats. They're no different from the rats you see running around. It's like you have some rats who run around in the ghetto, but then you have those rats who run around in fancy houses, in palaces. And we keep thinking that people's money, etc., and their so-called education makes them worthy. America, look at America. America thrives.
Yeah, but deal with the case. Don't let's not philosophize yet. Let's deal with your specific reaction to what emerged yesterday.
Simply put, it's the Manafort and Cohen. They're running scared, and protecting themselves, and I think we should wait to see what will be Trump's response. You know, if he will respond the same way he responded, you know, to Omarosa. I don't think he will call them names, etc. I think he will be more cautious, realizing that he's been cornered, and you know. But I think he still knows that he's got the Eric Prince and all those people who are ready to fight for him, because I think this could turn into ugly war. Not just, it could turn into a military war. It's not as simple as we think. You know, it's like there's division amongst the CIA, this FBI. There is a lot of political intrigue, a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, you know.
Good point. Thank you so much for calling in today.
Bye.
Khalil from South Carolina, what are your thoughts about yesterday's events?
Hi. Hello to you and the family. I'm
not
surprised that you said, yeah, but I tell you, it's still shocking, even though I'm not surprised to see these pieces fall into place so logically in terms of what I was seeing as I've been following the news. So, and the way it's transpiring, it's really going to get very ugly. It's going to put our whole country to a test, really, I think. That's what I see.
Could you be a little bit more specific? What these terms that you're saying, it's going to get ugly. What does
that
mean?
You're right. Those are vague terms. Those are vague terms. I can speak more concisely than that. Okay. This is going to come down to the courts again, because the fact that we even have to be discussing now, you hear the talking heads discussing the fact that, well, can you indict a sitting president? And the reason that's a question is because it's obvious now the president has broken the law. He's committed a felony. You know, and you have to understand that this special prosecutor, he has all the tools in the world. He's able. I've seen the packet that they used to get the warrants to wiretap the president's son. It's on C-SPAN on the website. You can pull it up. It's the whole packet of evidence, and they have the emails where they were confirming the meeting that they wanted to meet to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. But I'm not trying to get off on a tangent. What I'm saying is that when these things are falling into place in a legal fashion, and Kavanaugh, it's going to come down to the Supreme Court, and this is going to be tricky. But I have to disagree with the last caller in one respect, in that when I watched the Helsinki quote-unquote summit or meeting or whatever it was, a farce, you know, a reporter, his name was Jeff something or another, but I watched the whole thing, and he asked a compound question of Mr. Putin, and he asked, well, did you want Donald Trump to win, and did you use any of your, I'm paraphrasing, any of your assets or wherewithal to fix the election? And he said yes and yes. And this is documented, and it doesn't get that much press coverage, but you can watch, anyone can watch it for themselves on C-SPAN, you can see it. So Russia has already, everyone knows that. And it's not just the United States, you see. Russia's goal is to destabilize the West because they're poor. See, we're talking about oligarchs. They steal money off the top, the gangsters. They siphon the money off the top so nobody else has any money. You know, they don't have a lot of money. Just the oligarchs do. The regular Russians, they're, you know, they're all gangsters. But they want the West to be weak so that they'll have more power. But anyway, so...
So do you think the president is vulnerable, or do you think that this would only embolden him to become even more brazen and reckless in his actions?
The latter. And I say this, this is why. I listened to Washington Journal this morning, and he's emboldened by his supporters, and at least a third of the calls and almost all of his supporters, they are really just stealing up now. They're putting the gate down. They're rolling down the gate. They don't care. They think this is all made up no matter what happens. And so, once again, this is going to come down to the court. Now, remember, last weekend we had Trump's personal lawyer, his personal attorney now, Rudy Giuliani, say the truth is not the truth.
Well, you know, you have to pardon Rudy because, you know, it seems as if he is suffering from some serious maladies lately, saying preposterous things and leading people to believe that there is something organically wrong with him. And it is not about his lack of legal prowess, but that there's something wrong with his brain.
No, so, he presents as if he's suffering from something. Yeah, so we have the president and his lawyer presenting with some sort of mental malady. But this is really going to be interesting because I can see the president's behavior becoming, it's going to become more aberrant every day that goes by now. He's nervous. He is very nervous. You see, because Mueller is getting it from all angles.
You mentioned that his base, as you see it, the way you interpret our current reality, is rolling down the gates. What does that mean?
Well, you know how in the city when you have, you know, you roll down the gate so nobody can break your windows, they're sealed up. They're not letting any information in. They're camped out where they are. That's it. You know, they don't believe any of this. They think that, I'm telling you, see, these people, this is the great white hope to these people. And that's why they have no problem with Russia. Remember, their namesake is that mountain range in Russia. See, these people are making a connection here. They, you know, they may be ignorant.
The Caucasus Mountains?
Correct. Yes. Yes.
So you think that one of the things that is already beginning to show itself is the uneasiness of Trump's base. Who was it? I think it was Vernon who talked about, he said, this is war. Do you think it's going to be that serious?
I wouldn't be surprised. I live in the South. I'm a former, well, you know where I used to live, so I have a different vantage point. And let me tell you, there are more guns than people around here. And the South is Trump country. And, you know, they just, it doesn't matter what this guy does. And it doesn't matter what, I have conversations with people because I'm very interested in how other folks think. You know, that's my trait. But, and it's fascinating. And I would recommend anyone who's listening, listen to Washington Journal from this morning. And as the reaction to these indictments, and the guilty verdict, two guilty verdicts, or at least an admission of guilt, and the guilty verdict. And you, these people sound delusional. You know, because at this point we're dealing with facts and law. And it doesn't seem to register with them.
Yes, because the feeling is that, you know, they talk about the deep state, and the feeling is that the government itself has been targeting the Trump administration from day one, and they're willing to back Trump all the way. That may include, and I've heard it expressed here and there, that they may have to defend the country against the the moves being made by the liberals and so forth. And this may be something that would concern them greatly and would convince them that they were right to hold that view about the government, that in assailing Trump, as they see it, that they were, this was what they had intended all along. But here's a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons, if you want to put it that way, one of the reasons for Trump being, quote, assailed, unquote, is something that I thought would resonate deeply with them. And that is that the president is charged with colluding with Russia. Now, it used to be that people who held these very, very conservative views were very anti-Russia, were very patriotic to the extreme. So how do they reconcile these seemingly contradictory views?
There is, according to what I've been reading and listening to, there seems to be a getting together of the Christian right, the evangelicals in this country, and the Russian Christians, if you want to call them that. They identify with each other. They have this, somewhat of the same. Because remember, you know, Russians, when Russia fell, as in most societies, when the economics come into play, people become more bigoted, more prejudiced, you see more hate crimes. They were beating up folks left and right. I remember reading Pravda online, and anybody who was dark, you were getting beat up in Moscow. So, you know, they have fascists and skinheads over. They have a problem with that there. You know, and so this is a movement. This is a movement. And back to, so when they say defend, they have certain connotations. Exactly. And there's one thing I'd like to say that I think is really important. A lot of folks say that the press is unfair to Donald Trump and that the overwhelming coverage of him is negative. And I'm going to say this from a social science standpoint. That is absolutely true when you look at the flat numbers, the statistics. But there is a reason. You have to interpret statistics. Now, the reason the news coverage of Trump is overwhelmingly negative is because he and his administration consistently and chronically engage in what are called negative and antisocial behaviors. Now, if the president were giving out Girl Scout cookies to homeless people every Saturday morning, you know, that would be a positive news story. And I'll put it this way. I've done coding before. There's different types of coding. Now, the coding that I'm talking about, where you can take someone's statements and you get a panel together and words and phrases are given a number, usually on a Likert scale, which is 1 to 5. You put it in an Excel sheet and you tabulate it, and you can clearly see, you know, you're turning qualitative data into quantitative data, you know, words to numbers, so that it becomes scientific and it's not conjecture. But I think that, so when we're all talking with folks who don't agree with us, please point that out. It's something to that, you know, because people don't like what they hear. It hurts.
Well, let me get back to this development from yesterday.
Okay.
In your view, what is the significance of yesterday?
I think it's very significant in that this is going to put our Constitution to the test, because apparently it's a nebulous area where if a sitting president can be indicted, because everyone knows now, he's clearly, you know, committed a felony. And if we're just getting started, remember, Manafort has to go to another trial. There's a lot more evidence, and the government has a whole lot of evidence from Michael Cohen. So it's been a huge pivot now. This was the pivot point, I think, because remember, this is the first trial in relation to this whole Mueller investigation. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but
you're doing quite well.
Okay.
Yes, you are. Well, thanks so much for calling and contributing. so meaningfully today.
Bye-bye.
We'll see how things go, but make no mistake, yesterday was an extraordinary day from so many vantage points. Legally, it was an extraordinary day that a president emerged as a result of a trial and as a result of plea agreements, emerged clearly as a main target of prosecution. He cannot escape it. And it may just be a hint of what is next, because they haven't spelled out the full breadth of charges that are likely to result against him. But those that were articulated were very serious. And it was the first indication yet so far in this debacle since he took office that he was directly implicated in wrongdoing by his own lawyer, former lawyer. Directly implicated. Mr. Cohen said he did what he did at the direction of the president, although, of course, Trump had denied it all along, saying he had nothing to do with payments to anybody. Manafort still has another trial to come up. But what came out of this first trial, although he was convicted on 8 counts, 10 other counts were declared, a mistrial was declared on the 10 counts because the jury could not agree on a decision in those counts. But Manafort comes up for trial number 2, and we'll see whether the Mueller probe will get closer to linking Manafort and his operations in behalf of the president to Russia and to other unsavory and illegal acts. There's a lot of money involved here. A heck of a lot of money involved here. And the question will arise, did Donald Trump or any of the Trumps benefit from the illegal activities of others? It's going to get broader, it's going to get deeper, and it's going to get more and more serious because the questions that have long lingered will take on more and more definition. So we have to just pay close attention. Thank you, Mitchell, Bruce, Vernon, Khalil, for joining us today and offering such extraordinary insights. And you've helped us appreciate the significance of yesterday. We'll see each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.